Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
I'm back from Oregon, but in a few hours I'm going to Oregon again. But I'm back. I'm
just
totally
can't
back.
Stay away.
Yeah, it worked out this way. It was not our scheduling, but yes, my dear daughter gets to do 4 days of college classes and then see her.
And she's done.
Again.
Man, they made it quick.
Yeah,
they
no, just like, pick her up, take her home.
In and out.
Oh, man.
Used to be 4 years, imagine? 4 days.
That
really
plane ticket wouldn't be too
down.
Expensive. Just take her back. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're rejected. College rejected. No, it'll be good to see her. But anyway, that's where I was last Friday. I had a moment where I was amused that we were like 15 minutes or so away from driving over to drop off all of her stuff and move her in. And it was the appointed hour of the secret podcast. And I thought, well, there's a lot going on right now. So it's just as well that we didn't do it last week. But yeah. There's a lot going on. Here's a segue. In the land of the computers, Dan. Oh, there's so much going on. So much.
Is there?
Well, it feels that way to me. Like iOS versions. There's like new iOS versions every couple of minutes.
Yeah, sure.
I updated my Apple TV to new versions of like tvOS, and Catalina is coming out soon.
Maybe next week.
If I knew when it was coming out, I couldn't say anything.
Yeah, I finally took the plunge and installed the Catalina beta on my MacBook. And you and I talked about this briefly before another podcast last
yes,
night.
That's right.
My experience has not been as negative as most people's. Like, it's definitely, there have definitely been some issues, but I have not experienced the same barrage of all the permissions issues.
That's good.
I don't know why. I don't know if it's the apps I'm using. I don't know if it's
they may have dialed it back in the beta too. Who knows?
I don't know. Yeah, I expected to be a lot worse off than I was. I did see, as I mentioned to you, when you first like start up, it does give you like an onslaught of apps that request notification permission.
Yes.
And which is good. I mean, that should be there, but it is a little, it's tricky, right? Because normally, in normal usage, you will install an app and that app will ask for notification permission. But now you've already installed, you know, 50 apps maybe, and they of course they all have just like queued up. They're like, oh yeah, by the way, we now need to ask you for this. So mm-hmm. You know, normally that won't happen. I can understand why it's not the best experience, but I'm not sure what other way to handle that there is other than just being like, by the way, you have all these apps already installed. If you want to remove notification permission from any of them, like go to the system preferences or whatever, which, you know, maybe that would be less of a you know, barrage, but at the same time it has its own challenges, right? Because most people just won't do that.
Yeah, exactly. I experienced this when I installed Catalina on my iMac rather than a fresh install, that it there were so many warnings, and it's hard to replicate that because then once it's installed, it's installed. But you know, The challenge here is I have to thread the needle in writing my review about complaining about the fact that I think Apple is getting in users' way at a level that I understand their motivation, but it's very frustrating. And also acknowledging that if you're not using older software, and if your software gets updated for Catalina, which as a beta tester, it isn't yet, but now presumably it will be, the experience isn't going to be nearly as bad, right? Like if everything is signed and the permissions are all requested and everything's cleaned up, like they're going to a better place. It is a better place, but it keeps sending me back to my kind of default feeling about Catalina, which is I get why Apple's doing it. This is the future of the Mac. In the end, I think that their reasons are pretty good, even if some of the implementation details are poor right now, poorly done. But if you're just a random user and it's today and you're thinking, should I update my Mojave install to Catalina? Gotta say the answer's no. Like, I don't see, unless you have a very like must use kind of benefit, and maybe that'll be a Mac Catalyst app, because at some point over the summer they changed the name of Catalyst to Mac Catalyst. maybe that'll be it. Maybe it'll be like, but Ferrite is coming out, you know, maybe sometime 2020, who knows. That would be a reason to update to Catalina or something like that. But otherwise, it's just like, unlike the sort of easy kind of slide from one version to another of the last few years, this is not one of those. It's one of those other kind of OS updates where it's a wall and you're going to hit the wall and you're going to have to decide, do I climb over this wall or do I just sit here at the bottom of the wall for as long as possible? And this is one of those updates that I think most people should probably sit at the bottom of the wall as long as possible.
I will say that what has been more frustrating for me than the Catalina beta is the Safari 13 update that's on both Mojave and Catalina, because that finally got rid of the old style extension model. Right. And I had a handful of extensions that were actually kind of important to like how I do my work every day. And some of those extensions are just apparently just not possible anymore. And it's really requiring me to do some significant retraining. And some of them were like, you know, more complex things like our friend John Syracuse. I had a extension that I love to be able to make like quick searches from the search bar. Uh-huh. There's a similar feature in Safari that's been there for many years, but it doesn't work as well as many of those extensions. Like I could just define a keyword, say, you know, if I want to search the six colors archives, I could type SC space and then type my query, and it would immediately do a Google search for anything on the six color site with that query.
You can use like Launch Bar or something that does all that same stuff.
You have to retrain. Like there are a number of other utilities. It's just the convenience, and exactly. Chrome actually does let you do this in their search bar, which I always enjoyed. And then I had one, this is stupid, but it was so useful. If you've ever searched for something on Google and then try to copy the URL from your Google search results, what you usually get is this incredibly long Google URL,
right, because they're
doing
click
all
tracking.
Yeah. And I had an extension that just cleaned those and gave you the normal URL, which feels like behavior that should be how it works.
Sure.
And all of a sudden that's gone.
I had a Safari extension that looked to hijack. There are some websites where a command click to open a page in a new window is basically disabled for some reason, and I don't know why, but 538 was a good example of a website that did that. And I had a Safari extension that basically said, nope, we're going to open that in a new window because my user says that's what he wants to do. Dumb website. And, you know, that one died too. Yeah.
And there is, I don't know if there is one in the Mac App Store that does something similar called Stop the Madness. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I think, again, it's based on the fact that what extensions can do now in Safari 13 is just very limited in terms of what elements of Safari they can interact with. So I think they can tend to be able to interact with stuff that's like on the page.
Yeah.
But not as much with the Chrome, as it were, app itself.
They can, I think that because it's all these content filters and content blockers like on iOS. I think it can interact with the domain and the object model of the
DOM,
page.
Yeah.
Like they can mess around with the page content and like have it look different or behave differently, but it's, you know, you're not hacking Safari anymore, right? You're hacking the page.
And I get that there are security concerns with that, and that's so much of what Apple has changed in macOS over the last several years has been about locking things down and making things more secure, which, as we all agree, is to the benefit, but can also be frustrating for those of us who have spent some time configuring the system the way that we like it, with stuff that we realize is potentially a security vulnerability, but like, you know, we made that trade-off, right? Like we consciously were like, yep, I'm willing to do this because it makes my life better.
That's my feeling about a lot of these features. And I think even if they've made it better, like it is a more restrictive security environment, and there are lots of good reasons. When I complained about it this summer, I got a lot of pushback from people who are like, but it's insecure. Sorry, I'm doing a voice, but it's insecure. They're fixing it. Like that's why they have to fix it. And like, I get it. But at the same time, my Mac is mine. And while I want Apple to make it the defaults locked down, and I want Apple to protect users from even like some more basic ways of being talked into making their computers insecure, what I'm not willing to do as a Mac user is give up all of my freedom to do what I want with my computer that I bought, that differentiates it from iOS because it offers these things, out of fear that some poor sucker is going to get walked through a 10-step process to disable all security on their Mac so that they can install malware by a sweet-talking malware salesperson. Like, right. I get that that can happen, but, like, there's got to be a limit. There's got to be a limit beyond which I can say, yes, I'm aware of the risks here.
There's a little irony in the fact that this happens, is happening sort of concurrently with, there was a story, I think it was in Wired this week, about that boot ROM exploit in like all past iPhones that makes jailbreaking much easier.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, that's something that should be locked down. It wasn't. I know it's not quite the same, but it's a little like
I've seen a bunch of people conflating that with a security hack. And it's like, no, it's a jailbreak exploit, but it's not like somebody can look at your phone. Like the security things we need to worry about are like the one that that happened with China and the Uyghurs. Was it the Uyghurs load a page and the web page takes over your iPhone?
Right.
Bad.
And if you have jailbroken your phone, you may be vulnerable to other potential
but
malicious software.
You deserve what you got at that point.
You made
that choice. Sorry,
that's fine. That's fine. But that's what we're talking about. You made that choice to be able to do that with the recognition that you are disabling some of the security features, right?
Like, yes.
And so I don't know. I mean, I'm not, those are a little apple and orangey, but yeah, it's,
no, this
I
is,
feel
right?
like,
and you get it though. Like Apple, we live in an era, Apple and Microsoft have to deal with this as stewards of these old computer operating systems. Like our modern era, like it or not, is an era of enormous threat on the internet. Cause everything is internet connected now, enormous threat. And as a result, deeply locked down operating systems.
Mm-hmm.
And there are, you know, there are control reasons why they do it. And there are also security reasons why they do it. And Google's approach with Android is different from Apple's approach with iOS, but Windows and macOS come from a totally different era. And one of the challenges that I see Apple struggling with Catalina is trying to say, we can't, these assumptions that this operating system was built on would never be made in 2019. So we've got to change the security model. Like, and I think maybe users expect the security model of the present day anyway, which is why having it ship completely locked down is probably the right thing to do. The challenge is, how do you sense that a user is not one of those locked down users? And, you know, this is my thing that I complained about at one point, which is, give me a few switches to flip that says I'm not one of those. And I'm going to compile software from open source repositories. And, you know, I'm going to run this thing that's not signed. And like, not everybody needs to do that, but please don't remove that. And what they said at WWDC was, if you want to run it on your Mac, you will be able to. And as long as they stick to that, it can be inconvenient. But, you know, it crosses a line when I feel like I'm being shamed and shouted at for doing it. And like I said, I think Apple's aware of it, and I think they are trying to walk that line. And I think that Catalina and future macOS releases are going to, they're going to do their best to try to find a balance that works for everybody. But is release number one going to be fine for people? Plus, like all the 32-bit, which we've had literally years to worry about it, but all the 32-bit apps going away. This brings me back to my original point, which is, this is a big change. There's a lot going on here. And for a lot of people, this feels like the kind of OS update that you don't install until either there's a massive security problem and your existing version just won't be updated, or you bought a new computer that has it. That's what it feels like to me, is it's one of those. And if you've been, you know, doing computer stuff for a decade or two, you know what I'm talking about, right? Like there are every few years, every 5 years, every 10 years, there are somewhere in there, there's always that moment where you're like, hmm. And then you, the people you know, and like everybody's still using, you know, what was it? Snow leopard.
Right.
And
right.
Like a lion is, you know, we can't be on lion because it broke like a bunch of things. And you're like, okay, I get it. Well, that's
but
where
sooner
we are.
Or later,
that's
it doesn't matter. Sooner or later,
sooner
it will
later,
not
you're
matter.
Buy a new computer, right?
Right, right.
Which well, is why people I know, like that's why Mike Hurley bought an iMac Pro this week, is because he wants it to ship with Mojave on it so that he can not install Catalina for a period of time. And I'm sure all those people like Stephen Hackett, and I've been thinking about this too, like whether you're going to virtualize Mac OS or you're going to keep an old Mac around, like there is going to be a thing, and this doesn't really hit people today, but I'm thinking out 10 years, like there's going to be a whole class of software that will be like, well, you can't run that on a Mac that requires Catalina. It needs to be older than that if you want to run that software, because it's old and it's 32-bit and it won't run. And so, like, if you're saving old computers to run old software, you need to keep a Mojave or a previous Mac around, because this is, again, a wall that cuts us off from the past. And cutting things off from the past is good, but if you rely on things from the past, it's bad. So, yeah, that's where we are.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out if there's actually much stuff that I'm using that is totally gonna die. There's definitely some, but
yeah, I had one. What was the one that I realized I couldn't run? I realized that I think actually before Catalina, I think maybe it was with Mojave, but maybe not. I lost the ability to run the old version of iMovie, which I believe is the only, so I have my whole workflow of getting things off of like old videotapes is I have my old digital camcorder, and it will also act as a bridge to like a VCR. And mm-hmm. I've been using this, and this is the thing that I've chained through like Thunderbolt to FireWire to, you know, this mini FireWire, like all this adapters, and it works. But to my knowledge, the only app that will control that camcorder is the old version of iMovie, which
right.
no longer works. And it's stuff like that that you don't even think of, and you go through the update, and then it's like 8 months later, and you look for that app, and you realize it's gone, or it does. It's got that circle through with a line through it, and you're like, oh no! And it's like a year has passed, and it's too late. And those are going to be the ones I bet that get most people. Although, you know, if you never liked Adobe's approach to subscription software and have been using Creative Suite 5 or whatever, I believe that doesn't work in Catalina. I think that's not compatible. I'm not 100% sure about that, but I think it's not. And let's use that as an example. Like, that's the stuff where you're like, well, yeah, I know this is a 7-year-old piece of software, but it works just fine. And right. I know it doesn't support Retina displays, but I'm still using a external non-Retina display on my computer here and blah, blah, blah. You can have all your reasons for it. Nobody's making you update, but you've hit the wall now. Like, you can't go any further. And still use that software. And that's what's going to bite people, is like that one piece or two pieces of legacy stuff where the developer is gone, or they made a new version, but you can't use the new version for some reason. Yeah.
Right.
It sucks.
Yeah.
And this is the all the controversy. I was seeing it this morning on Twitter, all the controversy about software subscriptions and how people feel like the old model where you could just buy a piece of software and have it forever. It collides with the reality that new computers have new versions of software that don't work with that software you bought. And so you can stay back on that old version forever, but eventually you're using an outmoded piece of hardware that's slow and old operating system versions and insecure. So do you really have it forever? I mean, sort of, but sort of not.
Right. Right. I mean, it's changed the dynamic of the way that we do things by interacting with technology. Because you think about previously, was there anything that quite fell into that category? It's like stuff didn't, you know, your book didn't stop working at any point. But, you know, the technology of the book also didn't advance much for several hundred years. So, you know, there's a
a car is a good example. I always have had people say, and I think that they're right, that, you know, no one really owns a car. Every car is rented in the end, because whatever you paid for it, if you bought it outright, and then how long did it last? And you can do the math. Like,
sure.
You paid essentially you paid a certain amount per month for that car, even if you bought it. And
your car never stopped working because of external changes.
It's true, but if you held onto the car long enough, it would be of a lower quality than all the other cars had come out, and you'd be like, it's like what our friends who you've got one, like, who love stick shifts, and they're kind of going away, and it's at some point you're going to be like, the new cars don't have stick shifts, but they do have this safety feature that means that I don't slide into another lane and hit another car, and then you have to decide.
It's weird, though, because you also then, if you keep them long enough, they become classic cars, and the value proposition changes again, which doesn't happen as much with technology.
Sometimes it does. The problem, I think, with the subscription stuff is that I can get an old computer, I have them here, and install old software on them, and they just work. And the problem with the era we're in now, and Marco Arment mentioned this on Twitter today as a part of that same conversation I alluded to, is he said, we're all riding on quicksand here. That's the problem I have with the subscription model. I think people should get paid and people should pay for value. And if you buy a $1,000 phone and then you complain that you want the app that you use every day to tell the weather costs $10 a year, that your perspective is completely out of whack. But that all said, this stuff, as somebody who also appreciates sort of the history of this stuff, all the subscription and DRM and all of that, like, it's going to be really hard, not impossible, but really hard to have a museum of old software in the future. Yeah. Because it's all like going through validation and, you know, DRM servers. And we've already found that some of the stuff that survived even from older eras has survived because of piracy, that the cracked versions of software are the ones that get posted, like on Apple II archives. It's all the cracked versions of the software because those were the ones that could be copied, and therefore they survived even though the copy protected one didn't. So I don't know about that. I don't love that it's sort of quicksand and you can't go back and all of that. But at the same time, you know, I get why it is the way it is. And the Mac is different, but it's not as different as maybe we thought it was.
True. Yeah. I will say, on the flip side of subscription software, it does confer benefits. For example, I signed up, earlier this year, a subscription to Office 365. That's because I only need it for certain things, but it was cheaper to buy me like a year worth of subscription than to buy it outright. And the benefit that came along with it, which actually proved useful this week, is that it was a family plan. And so my father was like, oh, a friend sent me the memoir he's writing in a Word document. What's the best way for me to like open that and do comments? I was like, well, I have this. I can just give you Microsoft Office, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, it's for five people or whatever.
Right. And it's like for no additional cost. I'm not even using it. Like, my wife only uses her work computer and she's got her stuff through work, so she's not using it either. It's like, it's literally just me. Yeah. I am wasting money by not letting somebody else use it. And this is the perfect situation for it.
Exactly.
So, you know, 10, 15 years ago, if I wanted to give him a copy of Word, I either have to just, like, you know, sort of acknowledge the fact that I'm probably bending, if not breaking, the license agreement by installing it on his computer if it's just my personal copy, or I have to buy an entirely separate copy. So, you know, dynamics and economics of pricing and availability certainly they're moving very rapidly. And I don't know if this is the ultimate final evolved form of that. I somehow doubt it, but it is certainly the era that we're living in now.
Well, the streaming software, you know, that you and I use for live streaming D&D games and things like that, Wirecast. I bought that earlier this year because they discontinued the previous version of the product that was called Game Show that was cheaper. Anyway, I bought it. And then they come out with a new version, like 3 months later, there's a whole new version. And in the old days, there would have been like, we'll grandfather you in, or you'll have an upgrade fee and all that. But I didn't actually buy version 12 of Wirecast this spring. I bought a year subscription to Wirecast. And what that meant was, it doesn't stop working, I think, when your subscription lapses, but you get all updates for a year. And they came out with a whole new version, and I just get it. And you know, next spring, I will consider whether I want to renew that or not. And you get support and some other stuff with it, too. But it's like, yeah, that's actually, I think that's kind of more sensible. Then again, you know, different models for different types of products. I was talking, I talked to Rich Siegel yesterday.
Right. I was going to bring up BB Edit.
About BB Edit. And, you know, what they do is that they discount you one version back, which was the last version lasted for 2 years. You don't have to update, but if you pay them, and I think it's like $30 if you had the last version. If you own,
I can confirm that because I just bought the update yesterday.
If you own any version before that, going back to version 2.0 decades ago, it's $40. And if you get it new, it's $50. However, in the Mac App Store, they can't do that. So in the Mac App Store, and we should say BB Edit, I have to say this because people don't know, BB Edit is free. It has a small set of features that are pro features or they're newer features that are unlocked when you pay. And you can try them out for a month, but then they're locked up after that. But the bulk of the app is free. On the Mac App Store, BB Edit is also free, but there they have a subscription, and it's like $30 a year or something like that. So it's more, but different. So, you know, because that's how they have to do that there. And I got the sense from Rich that he doesn't love that, but that's the way that they can be in the Mac App Store. And it's just another way you can pay for it. And I think they actually offer a price where you can get out of jail, where you can basically pay them a flat fee and they will pull you out of the Mac App Store and give you an official license. And then you're on BB Edit on the official license version. But, yeah, so that's just how it is, it's, there are lots of different ways to do it, but in the end, and people are cheap. People don't want to pay for stuff. I get it, but not you, dear listeners, because you're paying for the Six Colors membership, and we thank you for that. But I get it. At the same time, the people who make the stuff that we use have to live their lives. So that's the truth of it.
I went a long way. So much of it is about means, too. I mean, I remember as a kid wanting to play around with all the awesome softwares out there, and it was prohibitively expensive to a teenager, right?
I had no money. Right.
Even Office was several hundred dollars.
This is the other thing that people don't know, who maybe don't have the historical perspective. Software used to be way more expensive. BB Edit used to cost like $250, $300. I don't know what it was. It was an enormous amount of money compared to what it is now, which is $50. And this is also why you see subscriptions and other kind of like alternate ways of paying for things, is that stuff like, I know it seems a lot to pay $100 a year for Microsoft Office, but good Lord, you used to have to buy Microsoft Office, and it was like, unless you were a student or educator, it was like $500.
$500. Photoshop was incredibly expensive.
Photoshop was like $800. I can't even remember.
It was professional level software. Yeah. Like I would flip through those old Mac catalogs and cast wistful gazes at hardware and software that was just ridiculously priced for a teenager. And that's because I didn't need it. I just wanted to play with it.
So could you buy Photoshop and use the same version of Photoshop with no paid updates for 5 years on a computer that was getting older and slower as you went? Yes, you could. The counter argument is, now I pay $110 a year or something for Photoshop, and I just get the updates, and forever. If I pay $110, so they raise the price and I get angry.
Or they change it, yeah.
Or they change the bundle or whatever.
They alter the deal.
Yeah, exactly. But for now, and then an Office is a similar thing. It's like, yeah, that's a pretty good deal. Like for $100 for Office 365, you get a terabyte of OneDrive and all the Office apps on your Mac and on iOS. It's like, it's a pretty good deal.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
If you need that. But it's a way better deal. In my opinion, it is a way better deal than what software used to cost, because it used to be priced very expensively. That was how they made their living. And now they are finding, I think, a better approach, which is lower prices but ongoing revenue stream. And if you use it and rely on it, you keep paying. And the truth is that the subscription model is the right – people are going to be angry at me. It's the right model for software, because software as a standalone product is a fallacy. Software is always changing. Your operating system updates, and they have to – and new hardware comes out, and the developers of the third-party software have to update their stuff in order to keep it running. It is an ongoing task. No piece of software is finished, only abandoned. Oh, whoa, look what I did there. that's not what that quote is about, but it's true. Like – software has to be updated ongoing. And if you bought a piece of software in a box and the next Apple software update broke it, and you went to the developer and said, I'm furious that I spent $200 on this piece of software and now it doesn't work because I installed the latest update. And they shrugged and said, well, you didn't pay me to fix it to, you know, so pay me another $100 and I'll fix that. Like that, you can't do it that way. So right. Software is ongoing maintenance and people might not like it. And we may be suffering from the death by a thousand cuts, in which case I think the answer is going to be people are going to have to just reduce the number of things that they use and not use 100 apps, but use 5 or whatever it is. But I think the subscription model is the right approach, especially if you factor in now so much stuff is cloud-based and there are all sorts of like ongoing costs either to license access, like for weather apps from the APIs. Those are not free. They have to do that. Or flight tracking apps. They have to license right, the right. queries. They have to pay money per query from their apps, and they have to pass that on to you. And even just if you're doing maintenance. So I get, as somebody who's been using computers a long time, I get how it's kind of a bummer to be told you need to pay $100 a year for this thing that never, ever ends, rather than just buying a box and installing it for a flat rate. But it is more realistic this way.
Yeah. Yeah, if I could sell my books as subscriptions.
Oh, man. The Galactic,
every day you get a chapter.
The Galactic Cold War. Actually, you know, the Galactic Cold War subscription service is, you know, there are writers on Patreon. I'm actually doing this.
Yeah,
John Birmingham
this,
is writing his Apocalypse series of novels, and he's writing those in real time for patrons on Patreon, and it's kind of cool. Like,
I don't have the confidence to do that yet, no. But yes, I it's a valid model. I mean, you know, serialized stuff has been around
sure.
for a long time, so it's
subscribe.
Just...
I'll be a Galactic Cold War subscriber. The problem with
excellent.
Narrative fiction is that you do actually have to like make changes and stuff. You can't
right. That's what makes
you
me worried about it.
You get 18 chapters in, and you realize that this character isn't working, and you need to do something different. And you've got to say, "Dear, I've seen that. I have seen that on a Patreon. I have seen it where there's a note. I think maybe I saw it from John Birmingham where he was like, okay, you're going to say, who is this guy? And the answer is, it used to be this guy, but I changed them.
Yeah.
And just go with it.
That to me is the working without a net part, because I'm a pantser, and I just like sometimes yeah. I don't know, and I write myself into a cul-de-sac, and then I'm like, I may have to just go to some other part of this book and figure it out later. And it's like yeah. that can't be very satisfying to read, but maybe it's hilarious. I
feel
I don't
like
know.
I feel like that happens a little bit when you're more than a century on and you're reading Dickens and you're like, what are you doing here
yeah.
sometimes, and then you realize, oh, Dickens was writing it chapter by chapter in a newspaper, and every now and then there's just like
possibly getting paid by the word too, so
yep.
you know.
I'm just gonna move over here. That's quite a high wire act, but it is anyway. So this podcast brought to you by a subscription.
True.
Literally, it is your subscription to the Six Colors what array of products. There's the Slack, there's the podcast, there's the newsletter, which just came out on September 30th, which I feel bad because it's very much like we ran out of September, so we have to send this now. But that was also very true.
It's a very Apple
month.
Approach.
You know, it's funny, if you look back, this is just a little inside baseball, but if you look at the August newsletter, you'll see at the end that it's like, I always have that thing at the end, which is like all the posts we wrote in a month. In case you miss them, it's just handy links. And I don't know, I just think it's a nice thing to do. And it also shows, like, here's what we did this month, thanks to you supporting the site. Because primarily, you know, there are not very many ads on the site. Primarily, the site is supported by the members, and we appreciate it. In August, there's like two things.
It's quiet. It was
and
a
I
quiet
was like,
month. I was
oh,
away.
Yeah, right. I mean, you got married and went on your honeymoon, and it was like, I was like, oh boy, this is bad. This month, there's like a bazillion articles that we did, because we did the iOS 13 stuff, plus a bunch of other stuff, just a lot. So it just, September was a busy month. But that's how it goes.
Seasonality, Jason. Seasonality.
It's true. It's true, and we're still breaking through. And if there's an Apple event sometime this month, which there have been no rumors about, but I feel like there might very well be, just because I don't know anything about this, but
feels,
just the logic.
Like there are some shoes to drop still.
Well, so I'll just remind everybody that a year ago, Adobe said that they were going to bring Photoshop to the iPad in 2019, and that hasn't happened yet. And at this point, I look, it still hasn't happened, and I think, okay, there has to be a pro event coming. There has to be a pro Apple special event that's going to happen, that's going to have maybe a new laptop, maybe new iPad Pros. It's going to have details, if not maybe shipping, of the Mac Pro.
Mac Pro, yeah.
And among the things they could do if they've got new iPads is show off Photoshop, because that's a pro message, Photoshop on the iPad. There's so much that they could do that I'd honestly be shocked if they didn't do an event, just because if everything is queued up like the rumors say it is, you can see that that's a packed event. They got a lot that they can talk about, and they can send the message that it'll be for pro customers. The other speculation that I think you and I did here a couple of weeks ago is maybe they do that in like LA or something. Who knows?
Yeah, no, that could be
because they like taking it on the road, and that's one of the places where professional, you know, media people, especially like their customers, their pro customers are.
Well, so much of what they were talking about when they demoed the Mac Pro back in WWDC was targeted at those kinds of users.
Yeah, right, exactly, at video pros. So that's my bet. I'm going to bet, let's say, we'll do it here. I like to make all my ridiculous predictions on this secret podcast.
You got two options, I'm guessing.
I'm going to say... You're right. I'm going to say October 29th.
Okay. Yeah, I think you're right.
I was
going to
say
right.
the 22nd, but you know, no, it was right hard up against Halloween last year. So I'm going to say October 29th, and I'm going to say in LA.
I like that. I also was thinking, I agree that the 29th seems more plausible to me. I think it may still be in San Francisco, but I like your thinking on the LA.
It could be. I mean, the easy thing to do is just do it at the Steve Jobs Theater.
Sure. Right. I for me, I feel like,
but
I guess it depends on
Chicago,
how good they're...
Brooklyn, you know, they're doing other stuff. They're trying different stuff.
I feel like they usually do fall events somewhere in the Bay Area, and oftentimes their off-location events are the March event.
Yeah, except
not always.
Brooklyn was in October.
Yes, yes.
So
it's not out of the question.
And Apple, you know, Apple has a base of operations in New York. They've got like their briefing center and all that, so they're comfortable there. So they could go back to New York. But I kind of feel like, given especially that they're launching Apple TV Plus in, you know, which is based in LA, that whole group is in LA on November 1st. That a late October event in LA. Wraps, you know, it gets the executives down there, and it's like a whole like series of Apple whatever's happening in LA around that same time. Kind of would make sense, but who knows? I don't know. But I feel like it's out there. So that would be, anyway, that's when I expect, because people are asking me now, like, what about that Photoshop announcement? It's like, that feels about right. That would be it. That it would coincide with new iPads. And they would make a big deal about, look how serious we are about the iPad as a pro device. iPad Pro couldn't be more pro. It's got Photoshop on it now. And so that's my guess, is that that's what's going to happen.
Solid guess.
But who knows? Who knows? I mean, this is all predicated on, I mean, we know the Mac Pro is going to happen. That 16-inch MacBook Pro is still just a strong rumor. And, you know, there's nothing stopping it from going next spring.
Right. Yeah. And... And yeah, I mean, it is strong.
Minor
it is strong.
iPad speed bumps wouldn't have to happen this fall. They could happen next spring. You know, they could release the Mac Pro with a press release because they already announced it. Like, it doesn't have to happen. But if all that stuff is ready, that's a good event. I think that's actually a really solid event. And I look forward to it. So I hope it exists.
Yep. I think you make a very compelling argument for it. It does feel like there are some things left to discuss before we sort of have everything in place for the holiday season. There's a wrinkle in there.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about this now. 29th could work. I'm thinking, didn't they just announce that the earnings is on the 30th?
Oh, I haven't looked.
They announced this in the past week. Yeah, it's on the 30th.
Uh-huh.
So, and they've done events that are up against earnings before, but now I can't remember
if they do them
before or after, traditionally.
I think they've done them before.
I think they do them before. I mean, it doesn't really matter because that quarter is closed already.
Yeah.
But I think they, you know, there's generally a, you know, you don't want to muddle your messages. So that could be, yeah. So if they, but it's usually, that's a Wednesday. I feel like they're usually on Tuesdays.
Yeah, the events are usually, the earnings is usually on a Tuesday.
I'm going to have to look back now at when those actually happened. Because...
Oh, well, the last one was on a Tuesday. That's true.
They are traditionally on Tuesdays, which is, I mean, they move, they do move occasionally, but they could have pushed it back a day.
I accuse you, Apple, of revealing everything. You've given everything away.
Anyway. We're reading the tea leaves live on air.
Oh, man. Well, okay.
I'm feeling better about that 29th date now. Okay. Though. I am feeling like that's pretty plausible. So you heard it here.
Yeah, like literally while it happened.
While we thought about it.
All right. Well, next week, I'm not going anywhere. So I'll be
good
back here.
Nice.
Bye, Dan.
Also not going anywhere. Goodbye, Jason.
I predict we'll be back in a week. How about that? Did that work?
All right. Excellent.
Okay.
Excellent.
Bye.
Bye, Jason.